Chapter 15. The Hole in Space. Tedor Rizzet turned as Byron entered the pilot room again. His hair was gray, but his body was still vigorous, and his face was broad, red, and smiling. He covered the distance between himself and Byron in a stride and seized the young man's hand heartily. "By the stars," he said, "I'll need no word from you to tell me that you are your father's son. It is the old rancher alive again." "I wish it were," said Byron somberly. Rizzet's smile faltered. "So do we all, every one of us. I'm Ted Rizzet, by the way. I'm a colonel in the regular Linganian forces, but we don't use titles in our own little game. We even say sir to the Autarch. Oh, that reminds me." He looked grave. "We don't have lords and ladies or even ranchers on Lingane. I hope I won't offend if I forget to throw in the proper title sometimes." Byron shrugged. "As you said, no titles in our little game. But what about the trailer? I'm to make arrangements with you, I take it?" For a flickering moment, he looked across the room. Gilbert was seated, quietly listening. Artemisia had her back to him. Her slim, pale fingers wove an abstracted pattern on the photo contacts of the computer. Rizzet's voice brought him back. The Linganian had cast an all-inclusive glance about the room. "First time I've ever seen a Turanian vessel from the inside. Don't care much for it. Now, you've got the emergency airlock due stern, haven't you? It seems to me the power thrusters girdle the midsection." "That's right." "Good, then there won't be any trouble. Some of the old model ships had power thrusters due stern, so that trailers had to be set off at an angle. This makes the gravity adjustment difficult and the maneuverability in atmosphere is just about nil." "How long will it take, Rizzet?"
"Not long. How big would you want it?"
"How big could you get it?" "Super deluxe, sure. If the Autarch says so, there's no higher priority. We can get one that's practically a spaceship in itself. It would even have auxiliary motors."
"It would have living quarters, I suppose."
"For Miss Henriad? It would be considerably better than you have here." He stopped abruptly. At the mention of her name, Artemisia had drifted past coldly and slowly, moving out of the pilot room. Byron's eyes followed her. Rizzet said, "I shouldn't have said Miss Henriad, I suppose."
No, it's nothing. Pay no attention. You were saying?"
"Oh, about the rooms. At least two sizable ones with a communicating shower. It's got the usual closet room and plumbing arrangements at the big liners. She would be comfortable."
"Good.
We'll need food and water."
"Sure. Water tank will hold a 2 month supply. A little less if you want to arrange for a swimming pool aboard ship. And you would have frozen whole meats.
You're eating Turanian concentrate now, aren't you?"
Byron nodded and Rizzet grimaced.
"It tastes like chopped sawdust, doesn't it? What else?"
"A supply of clothes for the lady," said Byron. Rizzet wrinkled his forehead.
"Yes, of course. Well, that will be her job."
"No, sir, it won't. We'll supply you with all the necessary measurements, and you can supply us with whatever we ask for in whatever the current styles happen to be."
Rizzet laughed shortly and shook his head. "Rancher, she won't like that. She wouldn't be satisfied with any clothes she didn't pick. Not even if they were the identical item she would have picked if she had been given the chance. This isn't a guess now. I've had experience with the creatures."
Byron said, "I'm sure you're right, Rizzet, but that's the way it will have to be."
"All right, but I've warned you. It will be your argument."
"What else?"
Little things. A supply of detergents.
Oh yes, cosmetics, perfume.
The things women need.
We'll make the arrangements in time. Let's get the trailer started."
And now Gilbert was leaving without speaking. Byron's eyes followed him too, and he felt his jaw muscles tighten.
Henriads. They were Henriads. There was nothing he could do about it. They were Henriads. Gilbert was one and she was another.
He said, "And of course there'll be clothes for Mr. Henriette and myself. That won't be very important."
"Right. Mind if I use your radio? I'd better stay on this ship till the adjustments are made."
Byron waited and the initial orders went out. Then Rizzet turned on the seat and said,
"I can't get used to seeing you here, moving, talking, alive. You're so like him.
The rancher used to speak about you every once in a while.
You went to school on Earth, didn't you?"
"I did. I would have graduated a little over a week ago if things hadn't been interrupted."
Rizzet looked uncomfortable.
Look, about your being sent to Rhodia the way you were. You mustn't hold it against us. We didn't like it. I mean, this is strictly between us, but some of the boys didn't like it at all.
The Autarch didn't consult us, of course. Naturally, he wouldn't. Frankly, it was a risk on his part. Some of us...
I'm not mentioning names. Even wondered if we shouldn't stop the liner you were on and pull you off. Naturally, that would have been the worst thing we could have possibly done. Still, we might have done it, except that in the last analysis, we knew that the Autarch must have known what he was doing.
It's nice to be able to inspire that kind of confidence. We know him. There's no denying it. He's got it here. A finger slowly tapped his forehead. Nobody knows exactly what makes him take a certain course sometimes, but it always seems the right one. At least he's outsmarted the Tirani so far, and others don't.
Like my father, for instance.
I wasn't thinking of him exactly, but in a sense, you're right. Even the rancher was caught. But then he was a different kind of man.
His way of thinking was straight. He would never allow for crookedness. He would always underestimate the worthlessness of the next man. But then again, that was what we liked best, somehow. He was the same to everyone, you know.
I'm a commoner for all I'm a colonel. My father was a metal worker, you see. It didn't make any difference to him. And it wasn't that I was a colonel, either. If he met the engineer's prentice walking down the corridor, he'd step aside and say a pleasant word or two. And for the rest of the day, the prentice would feel like a master engine man. It was the way he had. Not that he was soft. If you needed disciplining, you got it. But no more than your share. What you got, you deserved, and you knew it. When he was through, he was through. He didn't keep throwing it at you odd moments for a week or so. That was the rancher. Now the Autarch, he's different. He's just brains. You can't get next to him, no matter who you are. For instance, he doesn't really have a sense of humor. I can't speak to him the way I'm speaking to you right now. Right now, I'm just talking. I'm relaxed. It's almost free association. With him, you say exactly what's on your mind with no spare words, and you use formal phraseology, or he'll tell you that you're slovenly. But then the Autarch's the Autarch, and that's that.
Byron said, I'll have to agree with you as far as the Autarch's brains are concerned. Did you know that he had deduced my presence aboard this ship before he ever got on?
He did?
We didn't know that.
Now there, that's what I mean. He was going to go aboard the Tyranian cruiser alone. To us, it seemed suicide. We didn't like it. But we assumed he knew what he was doing. And he did.
He could have told us you were probably aboard the ship. He must have known it would be great news that the rancher's son had escaped. But it's typical. He wouldn't.
Artemisia sat on one of the lower bunks in the cabin. She had to bend into an uncomfortable position to avoid having the frame of the second bunk pry into her first thoracic vertebra, but that was a small item to her at the moment. Almost automatically, she kept passing the palms of her hands down the side of her dress. She felt frayed and dirty, and very tired. She was tired of dabbing at her hands and face with damp napkins. She was tired of wearing the same clothes for a week. She was tired of hair which seemed dank and stringy by now. And then she was almost on her feet again, ready to turn about sharply. She wasn't going to see him. She wouldn't look at him. But it was only Gilbert. She sank down again.
Hello, Uncle Gil.
Gilbert sat down opposite her. For a moment, his thin face seemed anxious. And then it started wrinkling into a smile.
I think a week of this ship is very unamusing, too. I was hoping you could cheer me up.
But she said, Now, Uncle Gil, don't start using psychology on me. If you think you're going to cajole me into feeling a responsibility for you, you're wrong. I'm much more likely to hit you.
If it will make you feel better.
I warn you again. If you hold out your arm for me to hit, I'll do it. And if you say, does that make you feel better, I'll do it again.
In any case, it's obvious you've quarreled with Byron.
What about? I don't see why there's any necessity for discussion. Just leave me alone. Then after a pause, he thinks Father did what the Autarch said he did. I hate him for that.
Your father?
No. That stupid, childish, sanctimonious fool.
Presumably Byron.
Good, you hate him. You couldn't put a knife edge between that kind of hate that has you sitting here like this and something that would seem to my old bachelor mind to be a rather ridiculous excess of love.
Uncle Gil, she said.
Could he really have done it?
Byron?
Done what?
No, Father. Could Father have done it? Could he have informed against the rancher?
Gilbert looked thoughtful and very sober. I don't know. He looked at her out of the corner of his eyes. You know, he did give Byron up to the Tirani.
Because he knew it was a trap, she said vehemently. And it was. That horrible Autarch meant it as such. He said so. The Tirani knew who Byron was and sent him to Father on purpose. Father did the only thing he could do. That should be obvious to anybody.
Even if we accept that, and again that sideways look, he did try to argue you into a rather unamusing kind of marriage. If Henrik could bring himself to do that,
she interrupted. He had no way out there either.
My dear, if you're going to excuse every act of subservience to the Tirani as something he had to do, why, then, how do you know he didn't have to hint something about the rancher to the Tirani?
Because I'm sure he wouldn't. You don't know Father the way I do. He hates the Tirani. He does. I know it. He wouldn't go out of his way to help them. I admit that he's afraid of them and doesn't dare oppose them openly, but if he could avoid it somehow, he would never help them.
How do you know he could avoid it?
But she shook her head violently, so that her hair tumbled about and hid her eyes. It hid the tears a bit, too. Gilbert watched a moment, then spread his hands helplessly and left.
The trailer was joined to the Remorseless by a wasp-waste corridor attached to the emergency airlock in the rear of the ship. It was several dozen times larger than the Tirani vessel in capacity, almost humorously outsized. The Autarch joined Byron in a last inspection. He said, "Do you find anything lacking?" Byron said, "No, I think we'll be quite comfortable."
"Good. And by the way, Rizzet tells me the Lady Artemisia is not well, or at least that she looks unwell. If she requires medical attention, it might be wise to send her to my ship."
"She is quite well," said Byron curtly.
"If you say so.
Would you be ready to leave in 12 hours?
"In 2 hours, if you wish." Byron passed through the connecting corridor, he had to stoop a little, into the Remorseless proper. He said with a careful evenness of tone, "You've got a private suite back there, Artemisia. I won't bother you. I'll stay here most of the time." And she replied coldly, "You don't bother me, Rancher. It doesn't matter to me where you are." And then the ships blasted off, and after a single jump, they found themselves at the edge of the nebula. They waited for a few hours while the final calculations were made on Jaunty's ship. Inside the nebula, it would be almost blind navigation. Byron stared glumly at the visiplate. There was nothing there. One entire half of the celestial sphere was taken up with blackness, unrelieved by a spark of light. For the first time, Byron realized how warm and friendly the stars were, how they filled space.
"It's like dropping through a hole in space," he muttered to Gilbert.
And then they jumped again, into the nebula. Almost simultaneously, Symmach Aratap, commissioner of the Great Khan, at the head of 10 armed cruisers, listened to his navigator and said,
"That doesn't matter. Follow them anyway."
And not one light year from the point at which the Remorseless entered the nebula, 10 Tirani vessels did likewise.